February 16, 2011. First item of business is a major introduction.
Chairs, members of the committee, for introduction today is LC 3815, dated February 2nd, 2011.
Me to do it? I'll do it. Mr. Chair, I move that LC 3815, dated 2/2/11, be adopted as a committee bill.
Chair Krieger moves that LC 3815, dated February 2nd, 2011, be adopted as a committee bill. Is it once again a reminder that this for introduction does not mean you support the bill or will support it later. Is there any objection to the bill being introduced? Seeing none, so ordered. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3002. Kevin Sterrett, Greg Miller, and Rod Harder, please. Oh, yeah. And can you summarize the bill for me, please?
Council. Chairs and members of the committee, House Bill 2002 provides non-residents who are authorized to carry concealed handguns in another state with the protections provided to persons with Oregon concealed handgun licenses, so long as the other state requires government verification of the person's authority to purchase using the National Instant Criminal Background Check System.
Thank you. Go ahead and end the order. Just identify yourself for the record, please.
No, Mr. Chair, it's his bill.
Thank you. Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, members of the committee, my name is Greg Miller. I represent the Oregon Gun Owners, an organization based out of the Portland area that represents firearms owners in the state who believe in the fundamental second right to carry arms, and then specifically regarding CHL and right to carry concealed weapons. Here today to talk about House Bill 3002, would ask for your support in passing that. You heard substantial testimony last week regarding House Bill 2792. Our bill is not altogether different. One component that is different is that it establishes Oregon as a state that would use the NICS check, the National Instant Criminal Background Check. We came to this decision based upon conversations that we had had with the state police after a similar bill was scuttled last session, and through the state police, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms recommended the NICS check as a kind of a uniform check that other states use. In the U.S., 29 states are NICS states. That includes Puerto Rico, Washington, D.C., American Samoa, and one other group of islands, but it's a broadly used method for criminal background checks. In addition to those states, the rest of the states that allow concealed carry are point of contact states, which use through their state police or state sheriffs also a criminal background check. The NICS check was established through the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act. It basically is a clearinghouse for folks who have been convicted of crimes or violations that would prohibit them from carrying a concealed weapon. So in that regard, it's a pretty broad database that folks can use for an instant check on folks. I think the generic time frame they use is about 30 seconds it takes to make a call or present a question to the NICS folks, and you can get a response back as to someone's qualification to carry a handgun. In your packet of information that was handed out, there's some basic information on violent crimes in the U.S. Statistics show that in the last 10 or 11 years, violent crimes have been going down in the U.S., and that's, you know, demonstrates, I think, that concealed carry doesn't have a negative effect on violent crime rates in the U.S. I think one of the states important to look at, I was able to find some specific data in the state of Texas. In approximately 65,000 violent crimes, 101 of those involved somebody that did have a concealed carry license, but that crime did not correlate necessarily to handgun-related issues. A lot of them were DUI type of issues, domestic issues, and some other kinds of crimes. So especially it demonstrates, I think, that CHL holders are often law-abiding citizens, generally, who respect the right to carry a firearm and do so with integrity. So with that, I won't belabor the issue too much. I'd be happy to answer any questions you guys have.
So for how long would this permit for non-residents using NICS, is that what it's called? For how long would that be valid?
I believe that the time period for a valid license is annual. You have to come back and re-up.
So somebody from out of follow-up, please?
Please.
So somebody from out of state would have to re-up if they came in, if they were non-residents in Oregon. If they were here, they would have to re-up every year? Is that what you're saying?
Representative Tomei, it would be according to that state's provision in terms of when the license would lapse, and you'd have to renew based upon that state's requirements.
Follow-up? Thank you. So for how long in Oregon, for residents, how long does the permit last?
Chair Barker, Representative Tomei, I believe it's an annual.
I just want to make clear that I'm understanding it. For Oregonians, it's annually. For a non-resident.
Representative, it's 4 years in Oregon. If you have a concealed license get permit from the sheriff, you need to renew it every four years.
Okay.
In Oregon.
I apologize for it.
But if I may follow up, please. Thank you. So, but for a non-resident, it would be as long as if it's forever in another state, it would be forever in Oregon if they were here?
Chair Barker, Representative Tomei, no, the intent of the bill is not to give residents of another state a right that is not afforded Oregonians. Folks from other states granted reciprocity would be done so in states that have a similar statute or a similar requirement that Oregon has.
Okay, and that's the new bill? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members of the committee, for the record, Kevin Starr at Oregon Firearms Federation. I'm not really sure what's going on here because our license is off for 4 years. This bill, I assume, would allow a person from another state to carry here while their license was valid. In every state, that's different. We heard an excellent bill last week to recognize other states' licenses. It was simple, it was straightforward, it was easy, I think, for every department to understand. I think this is really an unnecessary muddying of the waters that doesn't really accomplish much. I don't think it keeps anybody safer. It just puts all these different departments in a position of having to have a lot of information, or some department, presumably the state police, is going to have to go and determine which states qualify. And I will tell you, in the past, when the state police had the authority to recognize other states' licenses if they felt they were substantially comparable to ours, the state police said none were. You know, I came to Oregon with a pistol license from New York City, and they wouldn't recognize that. I think that the bill we heard last week is a lot simpler, a lot less difficult to understand, and doesn't create the problems and the costs that this bill does.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Garrett, please.
Mr. Chair, I don't read this bill as saying anything about only applying to states that have similar requirements. The only thing I see in here is a reference to the background check. So I think it's not that, my issue is not that it's more complicated. My question is the same as I had for these gentlemen last week. What do you do with a situation where a person has been issued a license in another state because they were issued a license, or in your case, because they passed the background check and were issued a license, and then it turns out that they have lost their license through committing a crime or something. They no longer have a valid license. What is the effect of that in Oregon?
Chair Barker, Representative Garrett, I believe that in an instance where somebody, say, for instance, for a vehicle infraction is pulled over, I believe that the officer instigating the stop on the side of the road, when he looks that person up and raises in a vehicle identification number or something to identify that person, the dispatch would advise that the CHL is held by that person, and if it's valid or not. So I believe that it's a point of infraction. That check is done, and then the person being pulled over is required to hold that CHL on their person, so they would have to...
May I just clarify?
Please.
So I think I heard you say that law enforcement has the means to be able to determine on the spot if a person's CHL from some other state is in fact currently valid, not just was issued at some point in the past, but they can do a spot check of its validity at that time?
Yes, I believe through the NICS check and also through what I think is called the once and warrants check, that information is available.
Representative Olson, please.
So, Greg, my understanding is that you're telling Representative Garrett here just now that you believe that all states provide that data through NCIC when you would inquire that through the National Crime Information, the connection that we have through the law enforcement data system. I mean, I wasn't aware that that existed for all states.
Chair Barker, Representative Olson, can you...
Well, what I'm interested in, I mean, if I'm a trooper and I stop somebody out on the road right now and they're from the state of Missouri, to determine whether or not they in fact do have a CHL and that it, in fact that it's valid. I wasn't aware that there was that connection.
Representative Barker, Representative Olson, as I understand in reading through the NICS check summary on the FBI's website, that information is available.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems that since we heard some testimony on bills relating to concealed handgun licenses last week and this week, there's some interest in moving something along these lines, and I am interested in being able to compare the different bills and see how they affect comparability to Oregon. So my question to the two gentlemen on the opposite ends of the table who seem to have different points of view on the advocating one bill or another, you've suggested that this bill is not intended to grant privileges to non-Oregon residents that Oregon residents don't have access to. I want to make sure that I understood that correctly. And then I will ask Mr. Sterrett if the bill you're advocating, which we heard last week, also is not intended to grant to non-Oregonians privileges that Oregon citizens and Oregon residents don't have. So can I verify, first of all, that I understood you correctly, that this bill is not intended to grant more privilege to someone who doesn't live here than someone who does live here gets?
Chair Barker, Representative Nolan, yeah, that's correct. It's not intended to give somebody a right that Oregonians aren't afforded. And if that's not clear enough in the bill, we're welcome to drafting something that makes that explicitly clear.
Okay. And if I might, Mr. Chair, since it looks like we'll be asked as a committee to weigh in on which of these bills, if any, we would be willing to support, I'd like to understand, Mr. Sterrett, your point of view on the bill we heard last week on reciprocal arrangements. Is that intended to grant to someone who doesn't live here an ability that someone who does live here wouldn't be able to access?
No.
Or does it have that effect? Whether it's intended to or not, does it have that effect?
No, Representative Nolan, I don't see how that would be possible. Oregonians who qualify for a handgun license can get a handgun license. So recognizing a license from another state, I don't see how that could possibly be interpreted as providing a right for a non-resident that a resident doesn't have.
If I might follow up, Mr.
Please.
Chair. It's my understanding, though, that in Oregon there are limitations on who is eligible to receive a concealed handgun license, but some states that issue those licenses either have no requirements or allow residents of their state to get a CHL that an Oregonian couldn't get in Oregon, criminal conviction, mental health diagnosis, some other things. Do I misunderstand that? Or
I personally know of no state that issues licenses to people who would be disqualified in Oregon. Now, I suppose it's possible, but given the interaction of federal law and who's disqualified from firearms possession, for example, somebody who had a domestic violence misdemeanor 50 years ago, he had a fist fight with his brother, is denied the right to own a firearm or a single round of ammunition for the rest of his life. So no state can issue that person a license. So I suppose theoretically there may be a state that issues to people we wouldn't, but I can't imagine under what circumstances that would be. You know, we don't issue to felons. We don't issue to people who have misdemeanors within the last 4 years. We don't issue to people who have DVs. We don't issue to people who have mental health histories. And I'd like to point out that there are a number of states that whose licenses are recognized in most of the country. Utah and Florida both have the most recognition. And I believe the concerns that some members of the committee may have should be allayed by the fact that those processes have been working really well, that people who've gotten Utah and Florida licenses, they're getting, many of these people are getting their licenses in other states. And in fact, our license is recognized in probably 12 or 13 states. There is, in our country now, there's a vast amount of recognition and reciprocity. And I don't know of anyone who's heard of a single problem because the license was issued from Missouri instead of Michigan. So I don't think that we have an issue of other states handing out licenses that we would, to people that we would consider disqualified.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you, panel. Oh, I'm sorry, Ron. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, you said something at first, and I didn't hear what you said.
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, for the record, I'm Rod Harder. I'm the Oregon consultant for the National Rifle Association. And last I had any good information, we had 60,000-plus members. I think I need to clarify for you that, first off, start off by saying we had a really good bill we heard last week. And that is the bill NRA continues to support. We supported that for a number of reasons that I articulated then, but I'm going to repeat a couple of them. One is because it's inclusive. We are including people with concealed handgun licenses from across the country, and I'll get to that in a minute, Representative Nolan. The other thing is the fiscal impact. When we start talking about which states do what, someone has to determine which states they are. Last session, that was the state police, and they presented us with a fiscal that was outrageous, in my opinion. And so we looked at that bill last week because it had very limited fiscal. There really isn't a lot of information that needs to be gathered up. There were some questions about licenses and whether or not people were required to have their license when they were stopped. We have, and I think the chair has received, along with some other members of the committee, a quote from Oregon law that says, if you carry a firearm concealed in Oregon, you must possess a license. That doesn't mean if you're from out of state, you can come here and say, yes, I got a license in Texas, but I forgot it. I left it home. The law is very specific in Oregon. It says you must have a license if you're carrying concealed. The other issue that came up,
I'm having a senior moment, I'm sorry.
There was another issue that came up. We have gone to legislative council with that issue and got an email back that said this bill covered it. With regards to qualifications, there are different qualifications in every state. I have a Utah license. My license is good in 32 states, one I have from Utah. Utah requires live fire to get that license. Oregon does not. There are a number of different states whose requirements are more stringent than Oregon. There are obviously some that have less. I have a printout that I wouldn't share because it's very sloppily done, and I did it. But I think you can make a case, as Mr. Miller had said, with regard to, despite what the other qualifications are, there are not many significant problems with people who have taken the time to get a concealed license. And there are, as I say, many states that have qualifications that are more difficult to meet than Oregon has. So with that, I would entertain any questions if I could answer.
thank you.
Mr. Harder, I have a question for you.
So what are the requirements that Oregon has over and above the NICS check?
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, Representative Tomei, you must take a safety course from a certified instructor.
Okay.
You can substitute a military qualification for that, a police qualification for that.
Okay.
That is, and you have to go. You have to go through the check. You have to have two letters of recommendation from two witnesses, or two character references. I have to consult with my colleague. What did I miss?
No, that's it. A class from an NRA certified instructor. A class from an NRA certified instructor, of which handgun safety is a component. You can also pass certain hunter safety programs. You need to have the background check and the two letters of recommendation. I'd like to point out that in most states, the requirements for getting a concealed handgun license are far stricter than ours are. And so I think that it's safe to say that most states' license holders will have
qualified for a much higher standard than required.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So what would those be?
I believe Texas has a 14-hour required class. Florida has Nevada. A similar class. In Nevada, you cannot carry a gun you haven't qualified on the range with. I can't remember all 50 states. That information is really easily available on a link on our website to Handgun Laws of America, every qualification from every state.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And also, part of the Oregon requirement is they instruct in the law so that people understand you can't who you when and when you cannot fire.
Unfortunately, Chairman Barker, that's not the case. And I wish it were, because I'd sell a lot more books. But currently, the requirement is that it be an NRA instructor and that handgun safety is a component.
Yeah, the ones I'm aware of, they also go on and teach a little bit of.
That's wise.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Chair.
If I may just please interject something. The majority, I would say the majority of instructors do, in fact, put the law into the course.
Okay, no further questions. I noticed some of the information we have here today, one of them is from the Violence Policy Center, that the headline is, attack on Rep. Giffords, others in Tucson, most recent mass shooting involved legal concealed weapons holder. And because Arizona, if you're 21, you don't need to have a permit. That's where this guy fell under. And while I think technically that's correct, that's kind of a misleading article. But it's not as though somebody actually did any training to get that. Okay. No, nothing further. Thank you, panel. The hearing on public hearing on House Bill 302. Open the House. So you don't want to go too far away. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2506. I'll call Kevin Sturt and Ron Harder, please, and the explanation of the bill, please.
Chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2506 allows persons licensed to carry concealed handguns to do so on all-terrain vehicles.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, Representative Ron Harder of the National Rifle Association. We certainly are not going to oppose this bill. It does. You can carry your firearm concealed in your car, on your bicycle, on your horse, whatever. So there's really no reason why you shouldn't be able to carry it on ATV or snowmobile. What I would like to say, and we've had this discussion with both you and Representative Krieger, that there is a better bill, or a bill that is not necessarily better, it's more inclusive. And that was one that I emailed both of you the bill number on. And for we had talked about having it heard today and didn't make it. That bill addresses all kinds of firearms, all types of firearms, and it extends basically to cover hunters, fishers, recreational, where this one does not. So it is a much broader bill, and I would not object to this bill at all. I think we should pass the bill, but we should also include a lot larger group of folks.
For the record, Kevin Starrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. I believe there are three ATV ATV bills out there now. This one, I agree with Mr. Harder, we're not going to oppose it because it moves us forward. But I would ask you to consider the provisions in 2797, because what this bill does, it allows people with concealed handgun licenses to carry on ATVs, but it doesn't address in any way the problem of what the term loaded means for everybody else. 2797 defines the term loaded so that everyone's covered, allows CHL holders to be exempt, and in addition to that, addresses the error that was made in 2009 with Senate Bill 603, where language that defined how a handgun could be legally transported on a motorcycle was inadvertently left out. I know in conversations with your counterpart in the Senate, there's never been a disagreement that that motorcycle language needed to be addressed. The one thing I think that's missing from 2797 is language that Mr. Harder inserted in the ATV bill he was discussing, which also included black powder firearms. And I think it's only fair that we include the firearms from Mr. Harder's youth in this bill. So this 2797 would include all of these, and if you just felt that it would be better to move the language into 2506, I just think we would be killing three birds with one stone.
Yeah, Mr. Harder, do I have to carry the piece of flint in my pocket? Representative Krieger, do you have...
Yeah. I think I was working at Klamath Falls for the state police when we got this thing started on no-loaded firearms and ATVs. When the three-wheelers came out, prior to the four-wheelers that we think of them today, and people were starting to hunt off of them, well, it was already against the law to hunt from a vehicle. We really didn't need to ever do that at that time, and how it ever got in this building to get that done, I don't know. All they had to do was cite the person hunting from a motor vehicle.
That's right.
Which included those ATVs. So it was never intended to be, I think, enforced as it is today, and I surely wouldn't have enforced it the way it is being enforced today. It gives me a little bit of a problem with the state police for doing some of it. I realize they're charged with it, but they also have some discretion of common sense. And so I did talk to superintendent about making sure they hire people with common sense.
May I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, you may.
Two things. First of all, one of the things that I don't think we've ever really addressed, I haven't seen it in any legislation, is the problem we have, and I don't know that this has actually caused a problem yet, but the Oregon definition for ATV includes virtually anything that you've driven off the road. So once you leave the road, say in your Suburban or your Subaru Outback, you technically are in an ATV, which creates all kinds of problems for license holders who are in their car. The other thing is that currently there's no exemption for this prohibition on ATVs for police. So your game guys or anybody who's patrolling in a place that is using an ATV, a police officer is technically violating the law by having a loaded firearm on that vehicle. I don't know if that's something you feel a need to address, but it is an issue.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Okay. Thank you, panel. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2506. Further business before the committee. Committee adjourned.